Live from Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Randall White, and a happy new year to you thus far. Much of California, however, is under stay-at-home orders this morning and has been for weeks due to low hospital capacities. The only region of the state not under a stay-at-home order is the pandemic-designated Northern California region, which consists of Del Norte, Glen, Humboldt, Lake, Lassen, Mendocino, Modoc, Shasta, Siskiyou, Tehama, and Trinity counties. Now, despite the long list, those counties only contain about 2% of the state's population. Experts warn it will take months before the COVID-19 vaccine will make enough of an impact to return life back to semi-normal for the other 98% of the state's residents. But you wouldn't know that based on some behaviors over the holidays. New Year's Eve saw a party, for instance, in Granite Bay with roughly 100 people in attendance, an example of just how disconnected some are from the messaging coming from health and government leaders at all levels. Ahead on Insight, we'll talk about how gatherings over the holidays, even the smaller ones, could affect your stay-at-home order as more people do test positive for COVID-19. And then later in the hour, we'll get a bit of good news as cases of the flu have been unusually low this season, and more people also got their flu vaccine than in years past. But first, 2020 was a year that derailed many plans when less than 3 months into it, California was placed under a stay-at-home order. The hope was to reduce the spread of COVID-19, a disease caused by a novel version of the coronavirus that the world was just getting to understand. California's Lieutenant Governor, Eleni Kounoulakis, joins us now to talk about the state's response to the pandemic over the past 10 months. And Lieutenant Governor, welcome back to Insight. It's good to see you.
Great to be here with you, Randall.
Yeah, and a Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Happy 2021.
All right. I imagine you're hoping for a very different year than 2020.
Well, absolutely. 2020 had some of the great challenges, I think, in American history, certainly of the 21st century so far. And what you already have been talking about, the COVID-19 crisis, this global pandemic that has seized the world, is certainly unusual and extraordinary, and very hopeful that in 2021, we're going to be able to put it behind us.
Yeah. I want to start with an area of the state that is exceptionally hard hit by the pandemic. It's also the most populous. LA County has nearly twice the number of COVID cases per 100,000 people than what we're seeing in Sacramento County and some of the surrounding counties. In LA County, a new directive by the County Emergency Medical Services Agency is ordering ambulance crews not to deliver the most severe COVID patients who are on the verge, sadly, of dying at home to hospitals strained by the COVID-19 spike. And then another directive is restricting paramedics from giving oxygen to severe COVID patients with an oxygen saturation higher than 90% so that they can conserve the gas, which is in short supply. How did we get to this point?
Well, Randall, you're absolutely right. The crisis that we're seeing in particular in Southern California, but frankly, all over the state where ICU capacity has dropped well below the 15% threshold that has put the stay-at-home order in place. These latest impacts, like those you mentioned, are exactly what we have been trying to avoid from the very beginning. Being the first state in the United States to issue the stay-at-home order, being adamant about social distancing, mask wearing, and hand washing. Unfortunately, this surge has been worse than we anticipated, worse than we hoped. It is largely a result of winter setting in and people being essentially conducting more of their activities indoors. When you are indoors, if you are in close proximity to someone who has COVID, this is very contagious and there's a very good chance you're going to catch it. So that's why we have been strongly encouraging and issuing these stay-at-home orders to reduce the amount of mixing of people. We have, again, always recognized that it is up to individual Californians to follow these protocols in order to limit the spread. And unfortunately, too many people, either, you know, because they were exhausted and tired of being alone, or because they felt that maybe it wasn't as dangerous as the government officials were saying, a variety of reasons that resulted in people getting together at higher numbers than was safe. And we have now seen this surge. And again, I can quantify it, but I think everybody knows that the numbers have gone through the roof. And now, as a result, we see the impacts, which is not enough oxygen, not enough healthcare workers, not enough hospital beds.
You mentioned how contagious it is, and we now know that the even more contagious variant of the coronavirus, the novel coronavirus, is in California. That must be a concern.
Well, of course it is. It's already extremely contagious. Now, with this strain that could allow it to spread even faster, you know, we're really, again, it's at this point with vaccines becoming more and more readily available and a projection of being able to vaccinate high-risk people within the next few months and really being able to flatten the curve by moving toward herd immunity. It's a race against time. We know, we believe that the vaccines will resist this new strain. That's very good news.
That is
good
news.
But in the meantime, it's very cold comfort if someone in your family, particularly in a high risk environment of being over 65 or having underlying conditions, if they get it. And then, of course, we also know that very healthy people who've gotten it have had it be fatal for them. So it's a race against the clock. We're working very hard on moving vaccines through the state as quickly as possible. And that is our number one priority right now.
Back to the situation in L.A. County, a supervisor there, Hilda Salas, is quoted as telling CNN that hospitals are declaring internal emergencies and that the situation in L.A. is a, quote, human disaster. Do you agree with that assessment?
Well, I think that Supervisor Solis, she's on the ground. She knows. We do know that hospitals are being impacted disproportionately in Southern California, but frankly, all over the state now. And the longer that we have these positivity rates over 10%, the more we're going to see all of our hospitals impacted in this way. And we're calling on Californians to do their part, stay home, reduce mixing, follow the basic protocols in order to be able to flatten the curve again.
Yeah. Supervisor Solis, thank you for the correction there. So as you touched on just a moment ago, pandemic fatigue has many people going out despite the recommendations to stay at home. What is the state doing to counteract that? Because it's a pretty strong force.
Well, you know, from the beginning, we said we're not looking to have, you know, a major enforcement effort here. Yes, we have been mobilizing, particularly businesses, if they're not complying and providing PPE and safe environment for their workers. But that's not what this is about. This is about California being a science-based state, not listening, especially early on when Donald Trump was accusing his supporters that wearing a mask was somehow being disloyal to him. I mean, my goodness, how could he do this when it is absolutely clear that the safest thing that we can do is wear masks, you know, undermining public safety that way. We have felt the impact of that. There are parts of the state where in listening to Donald Trump's messaging and watching, in many cases, Fox News or some of the right-wing media, that masks are for sissies. We are better than this, Randall. And most people in California do heed the warning of the scientists that say that these protocols make a difference. But we have felt the impact of the undermining of these safety protocols.
We have. Lieutenant Governor, I just want to interrupt you really quickly because in L.A. County, which we have focused on quite a bit just because the outbreak is so bad there right now, a group of maskless protesters went into a Ralph's supermarket. I'm sure you're aware of this. Let's hear some sound from one of the interactions. This was captured by Samuel Braslow, a reporter for the Beverly Hills Courier.
Sir, you need to put your mask on.
No, no.
You're going to get sick, sir.
No, no.
I have a mask for you. Oh, and I also want to
get a mask. I don't either. I don't wear masks.
So there's a lot going on there. It's kind of hard to hear, but you can hear, I don't wear a mask. I don't need one, sir. You need to put a mask on. And this group, they also tried to get into the Century City Mall. What do you say to those who feel that a face mask order is infringing on their rights, whether they believe that it works or not? And in this case, they said they don't need one. But for those who believe it's infringing on their rights.
Well, I think it's just incredibly selfish and irresponsible of them. There is nothing infringing of our rights as Californians or as Americans to want to take the kinds of steps that we know scientifically will lead to a reduction in the number of our fellow Californians who die. What are they talking about? Again, you know, we live in a democracy, Randall. I'm a Greek American. I'm very proud of the fact that Greece in Athens had the first democracies in the world. It is self-government. We come together and decide how we are going to live and under what system of rule of law. It requires responsibility. It also requires caring about one another. If we are not able to work together in order to have the best system for all of us, tyranny ensues. Someone, you know, there chaos ensues, and then someone comes in and says, this isn't working. I'm just going to make the decisions for everyone, and you're going to have to listen to me. You know, democracy is the best possible system, and it requires us to work together and to care about one another. So it's disappointing that there are people out there who do that, but I will also say this, the majority of people do not fall into the category of going into Ralph's and raising a ruckus saying, you can't make me wear a mask. The majority of people are not living that way. I mean, I've been in lots of Ralph's and lots of supermarkets, so I try to limit the number of outings that I have, and most people are complying. And again, we're really almost through this. The light is there at the end of the tunnel. The number one priority among government officials in the state right now is getting the vaccine out. Working with the federal government, local governments, hospitals, now dentists, pharmacies, to be able to make the vaccine as readily available as possible for Californians in the tiers that we've laid out.
I have to agree with you, just circumstantially on my part. It's very rare now that I see someone without a mask in a public space like a supermarket or that sort of setting. And so, like you said, it's a small number of people that are causing these disruptions. I want to touch a little bit on the vaccine, because that's the big hope, or I should say vaccines, because it is plural. During his coronavirus press briefing yesterday, Governor Gavin Newsom mentioned that vaccine distribution was not where it should be. Let's take a quick listen to that.
It's gone too slowly, I know, for many of us, all of us, I think. We want to see 100% of what's received immediately administered in people's arms. And so that's a challenge across this country. It's a challenge, for that matter, around the rest of the world. But that's not an excuse. And so we're already working this last number of days to increase the number of distribution sites and, more importantly, to accelerate the efforts of who can distribute the vaccines.
So to accelerate the efforts, how will these acceleration efforts get more vaccines distributed if healthcare workers are being vaccinated first?
So really quickly, by the numbers, the federal government is ultimately in charge of the distribution of the various vaccines, the Moderna vaccine, the Pfizer vaccine, and California gets our share. Once it gets to us, it's up to us to distribute. So we've received been allocated about 2 million doses. I think people mostly know you need two doses to get the full effect of the vaccine. And we have vaccinated only about 500,000 people so far. So we are laser focused on this. I just cannot assure people more that everybody involved is working around the clock to get the vaccines that we get from the federal government. And again, there are some issues about when we get them, how we get them, how we're notified. You know, this is not easy, But we are laser focused on this at this point. And the promise that we have from the federal government is that we will get an additional 10 million doses by the end of February. Mm. That's just 2 months away. So at that point, with 12 and a half million doses, we're looking at getting through not just healthcare workers, not just congregate care, people in congregate care where spread has been so devastating, but also getting into tier 1B, which includes anybody 75 years and older. That's the first part of it.
Anybody, regardless of any underlying health conditions, if you're
correct.
Above
anyone
that age.
75 or, uh-huh. Exactly. Then we get into people working in education, teachers, childcare, emergency services, people working in food and agriculture. These are priority groups. And then also still in tier two, people over the age of 65 and other folks working in critical essential work. The governor says there's a light at the end of the tunnel. And we're looking at the end of February, beginning of March, where we have cut a wide swath through California communities in being able to vaccinate. And I really encourage everyone, you know, I always kind of roll my eyes when someone says, oh, go to my website. Our website is extremely user-friendly and really informative.
The website for COVID.
Yeah, mm-hmm. COVID19.ca.gov. If you even just Google, how do I get a vaccination in California? It's the first thing that pops up. Mm. And it will help you see where you are in the ranking, how far along we're making our way through this process. But make no mistake about it, Randall, we get people vaccinated, we're going to get through this. And it's coming. We are just months away, hopefully just 2 to 3 months away before we start to see a serious, significant impact of people having the vaccines and as a result, having it much safer for everybody, no matter where you work or what activity you're participating in, and being able to get our schools open again.
Did the state work with Google and some of the other search engines to get that high placement?
I think it's mostly people just hitting the link.
I see.
I think that they're also advertising as well to make sure that we're high up.
But to get it at
really,
the top.
It's a great website, COVID19.ca.gov. Really encourage everybody to use that as a resource.
So back to the distribution, we've only been able to get a little more than a quarter of what the state has already received into people's arms. What would you say, Lieutenant Governor, is the biggest hurdle? You've mentioned, you know, that there's some complications, but is there a one big hurdle that's keeping it from being 100% of that vaccine being distributed at this point?
Randall, it's the startup. What we firmly expect is that we will have an accelerated pace as the weeks go by and we get better at this. This is something brand new. There are a lot of components that make it really complicated, but we're working through those issues. Again, increasing the number of places where you can get vaccinated. So for instance, you know, you can go to your doctor's office. You can go to the kind of place where you might go get a test, right? Mm-hmm. You can go to a pharmacy. But now what we're looking at is going to your dentist's office, going to a dermatologist's office, going to other healthcare providers, mobilizing our National Guard who have the kind of training to be able to administer shots. Essentially, any of these places where, again, you know, you don't think about it, but when you go to the dentist and they give you Novocaine,
oh, right?
They're injecting in you, right? So they're trained to do this kind of thing. So what people are going to see is a ramping up that gets faster and faster as time goes on, so that as we get to the end of February and those 12 and a half million doses that we've been promised, that we have maximize the number of people in this state who know how to deliver a shot, a tracking system so we can make sure that when you get your first shot, you can go back and get your second shot just as easily, and we can keep track of all of this. That is what Our government officials across the state are working 24 hours a day in being able to do. And that's what people can expect to see in this rollout.
Not to always be a downer, but could these efforts jeopardize the systems in place to try to avoid line jumping? Because there are people out there that really want this vaccine.
That's right. I certainly can't wait until I can get myself in one of those lines to get a vaccine. People should be very, very excited about the opportunity to be able to get vaccinated against COVID. We are very concerned that that people will jump in line, and the governor has been very, very clear. But at the same time, you know, you hear stories that once you open these vials, if you are administering, if a medical center is administering to healthcare workers, and then there are doses left over, you know, we've heard these stories, well, family members have come in and used the excess. Anybody who's out there who's trying to do the right thing, we're not looking at punishing people. We're looking at everybody coming together to be able to ensure that the priority people go first.
Overall, Lieutenant Governor, if you had to grade California's response to the COVID-19 pandemic, what grade would you give it?
Randall, I come out of the private sector. I spent 18 years in housing, and I have a business degree. I spent 4 years representing our beautiful country as a United States ambassador. I've been engaged in a lot of different kinds of organizational structures, whether private sector, federal level, and state level. Here's what I can tell you. We have extremely dedicated people working in our county and state health departments. We have extremely dedicated people in the private sector who've moved forward to help us buy laptops and hotspots for our kids who are distance learning. We have really extraordinary healthcare workers who are putting their lives on the line every time that they go to work to care for people who have COVID or to make sure that they can mobilize to help being part of the vaccination process. I hesitate to give ourselves a grade, but it's way up there. It's way up there because I am so humbled by the mobilization. And then, of course, those everyday people who you were just saying who put their mask on, not just because they want to protect themselves, but because they want to be part of protecting their communities. Yeah, you know, I give us a B plus A minus.
There are people, you know, that would, of course, disagree with you about the handling of the pandemic here in California. And they've launched a serious recall effort against Governor Newsom. But we should mention that over the past century or so, there have been more than 50 organized attempts to recall a sitting California governor. And only one made it to the ballot box. That was the effort to recall Gray Davis back in 2003. It was successful with voters, too. In regards to the current push, Lieutenant Governor, is there anything that proponents are saying that you feel is valid or deserves attention, perhaps not to the recall level, but you understand at least the concern?
Absolutely. And it's very important that people participate in our democracy by raising their voice and saying, hey, there's something happening in our community that we're concerned about. We want more attention paid to. No question about it. But Randall, this has been more than a government effort. This is government and our communities coming together. If there are lapses, certainly government takes responsibility. But if there are super spreader events, individuals need to take responsibility too. That's how we get through this together. But I stand by my grade. And I also will tell you that if it's very easy to point fingers and to criticize, but for people who have the time and the interest to sign into the governor's Newsom at Noons, you can see this is a man who has fully immersed himself day and night. He knows the details. He knows he is personally actively involved in combating the spread of COVID-19. And I think that he deserves a lot of credit for getting us this far. And And again, it's going to take all of us to get through the final stages and get ourselves vaccinated and get to herd immunity. But this is on all of us, whether it's the highest ranking government officials or if it's our everyday rank and file Californians trying to keep their work going from home, keep their kids learning in the home environment and staying safe when you go to the grocery store.
You mentioned all that Governor Newsom has done, and I've sat through many, many of those press conferences, and you're right. There's a lot of information there, and he's clearly studied on all of it. How much would you say that trip to the dinner party at the French Laundry hurt his credibility, despite everything else that he does?
You know, Randall, I deal with haters on my Facebook page that are shocking. It's shocking. These kind of organized efforts online to discredit people are very, very powerful. And I think that, the governor is the first to admit that he made a mistake. He was told one thing. What he thought he was going to was safe, sanctioned. What it ended up being was less so. And he says he made a mistake. He should have left. We are all human. We all make mistakes. I think it is a mistake, however, to judge the leadership of a person based on one mistake when you have a body of work that has showed incredible dedication to understanding the crisis that we are in and to do everything possible within his power to lead the effort to mobilize and to minimize the impact of COVID-19 on our communities.
And we should mention that a survey released last month by the nonpartisan Public Policy Institute of California found that most people in California think the governor has handled the economy during 2020 pretty well. And that includes residents of San Diego and Orange counties, typical Republican strong areas. What do you think we could do better when it comes to business during the pandemic?
Well, I'm very concerned about business. And first, one thing I think is very important is people know that retail is still open with very serious constraints. But that, I think, is helpful. Buying local curbside pickup, that kind of thing, I think is really important to help our small businesses. But let's remember, we got the federal stimulus. This is going to help us a lot. You know, for those who are still out of work, we have an unemployment rate of about 8.5%. It's much lower than we thought it could be at this point, but that's still a very high unemployment rate. Because of the stimulus, we've got now people being able to continue to collect their $300 a week. That is going to essentially put food on the table for people and allow for the bare survival of their families. But it's extremely important that that went through at the federal level. The stimulus checks of $600 per person are also going to help families. All total, about $50 billion will come to California through that federal stimulus, coupled with a $26 billion surplus for our budget this year because so many wealthy Californians pay their taxes. Now, that's a one-time stimulus. We have to be very mindful of longer-term impacts to the state. We know that these stories, both anecdotal and now somewhat quantified, of people and businesses leaving the state, we have to have our eye on the ball with that and do everything we can so businesses can survive not just the pandemic, but also longer-term economic structural changes that we know have been in the works for a long time.
Lieutenant Governor, we've kept you a long time and I really appreciate it. I do want to ask you one final question. When you were sworn in as the first woman elected to hold your office, and congratulations again on that, I'm sure a pandemic was one of the last things on your mind. What initial goals did you have that were then pushed aside as the state focused its effort, of course, on controlling the spread of COVID-19?
Well, Randall, I'd never run for public office before. I was one of those women, many thousands of women across the country who rose up and put themselves forward and ran and won in 2018. Being lieutenant governor is just the honor and the privilege of my life. I absolutely love my job. Everyone has been mobilized for combating the COVID-19. But beyond that, my focus in my office is very, very much public higher education. I sit on the board of the CSU, the UC, and now the Community College Board. So fighting to make college more accessible and affordable is very, very high on my list. You know, Randall, my grandmother in Greece never learned to read or write. And public higher ed in California has led to the California dream for my family and for millions of other families. And then, of course, environmental issues are very important. My role is also, I'm the chair of the State Lands Commission and sit on Coastal Commission, Ocean Protections Council. Our beautiful environment in California is largely part of the success of our state economically and socially and culturally. So that's another priority to me. And then, of course, I'm a former ambassador. I'm working on trade issues at the request of the governor. So lots of things that all come into effect, and some of which really the importance, particularly education and trade, have been very important during the pandemic as well.
Eleni Kounoulakis is California's lieutenant governor. We really appreciate you taking this exceptionally long piece of time with us this morning.
Thank you for having me, Randall.
You bet. Good to see you again. Up next, it's been almost a month since most Californians have been under stay-at-home orders due to a shortage of hospital space in their regions. We'll talk with Sacramento County's top health official about what we should expect in the weeks to come. And if you have any questions for Dr. Olivia Carcerier, shoot us an email, insight@capradio.org. You can also use the Twitter hashtag #AskInsight. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio. I'm Randall White.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Randall White, and our big conversation today is COVID-19. Since November, health officials throughout the country have been asking us to stay home during the holidays. They explained, really, the best way to protect loved ones is to have virtual celebrations. While there were those who stayed home for the holidays instead of gathering with family and friends, there were also parties that had more than the recommended three families in attendance. Granite Bay made headlines when a New Year's Eve party with about 100 people in attendance had law enforcement check in due to a noise complaint. No citations were issued by officers for the noise, nor the fact that there were many people in one house. And it wasn't the only New Year's Eve party that was busted where many were in attendance. Joining us now to help us understand the latest case rates, ICU capacity, and how gatherings could affect the weeks to come is Sacramento County's health officer, Dr. Olivia Carcerier. Great to have you back on the show, doctor.
Hi, Randall. Thanks for having me. Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year to you, too. The positivity rate for the county will be updated later today. Do you have those numbers already?
No, but the latest ones that we had, our positivity rate was 10%. So it seems like it's plateaued right now. And the case rate also seems to have plateaued. It's between 42 and 48 positives per 100,000 population.
So plateaued at a peak or plateaued after coming down a bit, or where is the plateau?
It's plateaued after a peak. We are hoping that in the next week or so, we'll actually see those numbers starting to decline.
Mm-hmm. And where are we with ICU capacity? Because that's the big one that affects whether we're open or not.
Right. So we've been in the stay-at-home order, under the stay-at-home order for more than 3 weeks. And during that time, our ICU capacity in the greater Sacramento region has hovered just below 15%, and sometimes it did go above 15, but over the last few days, it has been consistently below 15%. Yesterday, it was at 12%. So I think we are still in that situation where it's tenuous. We have to be cautious. We're not out of the danger yet because we're still waiting to see what will happen following the New Year's and right. celebrations.
Does Sacramento County have a plan? Should we hit a stretch like they're seeing down in L.A. County, where emergency crews are being told not to bring the most severe COVID patients to the hospitals because they're just so overburdened right now?
Well, we are working hard and following up with our hospitals to find out how they are doing. Many of our hospitals do have a plan for a surge. They have surge beds that they are able to use as well. But I think some of the concern that we have is with being able to have enough staff. So it's still a tenuous situation. And I think if the ICU capacity does go lower, then we have to look at other steps that we can take. And we are in discussions with the hospitals to see what would happen if we got to that situation.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about that party in Granite Bay. What were your thoughts when you heard about it? I mean, Sacramento County neighbors Placer County, so it's easy for whatever transpires there to make its way into Sac County.
You know, it saddens me when I hear those kinds of stories, because on the other end of that, we also hear so many times of people who've gone to parties and after that, they fall sick, and some people fall sick enough to actually end up in the hospital. We know that the highest risk that we have is for gatherings. And oftentimes people go to these places, they don't even know that the person they're sitting next to may have COVID-19. So I think it is saddening to find that people are still choosing to ignore the warnings that we are putting out.
Do you meet with other health officials in the greater Sacramento area to discuss these kinds of things, the case rates, contact tracing, all of that?
Yes, we do meet on a regular basis, at least two or three times a week, even more often, actually. And those are some of the things that we discuss. And we also discuss how we're able to get through some of the difficult situations that we have to deal with.
How far out from a New Year's Eve party would we start to see cases pop up and then contact tracing begin?
We usually see cases starting to increase after about a week, but usually 1 to 2 weeks is when we see what the impact from some of the celebrations, such as the New Year's.
What are some of the things, doctor, that you've learned since the start of the pandemic that have been useful now or in recent weeks?
I think the greatest lesson is communication is very important because in being able to talk to different people and explaining to them why we're asking them to do take the different measures actually helps. And also being able to listen to people, because oftentimes I'm not able to change anything, but the fact that I can listen to someone and empathize with them, I think really helps. Being able to work together is important. This is not something that public health can handle on its own. And I really appreciate all the partnerships that we have had in helping us to deal with this situation.
Yeah. Let's address the vaccines now, if we could. It's the job of the county to distribute them?
Well, the county is one piece of it. But again, this is, again, one area where we're working with a lot of other partners, such as hospitals, such as pharmacies. And so the county does receive some of the vaccine, and in some cases we are able to distribute it. In others, we also provide the vaccine to different individuals. Right now, we're still working on phase one, which is the healthcare providers.
Yeah, and actually Dana wrote in to ask if you are enlisting the major HMOs like Kaiser to administer the COVID-19 vaccines.
Yes, they are all in the system, and they actually got allocations directly from the state to be able to do the vaccinations.
Mm-hmm. You told KCRA that the county has had extra doses at times and has plans in place to handle that. Can you help us understand that a little bit better?
So I believe what I was talking about with that was when we hold a clinic and we have a few doses left over, maybe five or so, and all the patients that were scheduled for the day are done, we have a wait list where we have individuals that we can call up so that we can make sure that those doses are used up. And this is important because, for example, with Pfizer, once you've diluted it and once it's out of the freezer, you have a limited amount of time, maybe 6 hours, to use it up. So that's why it's important for us to have that wait list. The other thing that we discussed was where you get to the end of the list. For example, if you're working with tier one and you get to the end of the list and still have doses, whether you're able to move on to the next tier. And we do have that flexibility to do that. It's not an issue we're dealing with right now in Sacramento because we're still working hard to get up and get doses out.
Do I understand that you believe the general population will start getting vaccinated in the spring?
Yes, we believe it should be the springtime. And our hope is that in addition to us being able to increase the number of places that people can get the vaccination, is that there'll be more vaccine available, because that's important also. And that will help us in being able to have it available to the general public in the spring.
Finally, Doctor, where in the process are you for replacing Dr. Peter Bielenson, Sacramento County's public health director, who stepped down recently?
I believe that the county has hired a company to help with that recruitment and that they are receiving applications right now.
All right. Dr. Olivia Carcerier is Sacramento County's health officer. Thank you so much for the update. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and best of luck moving forward into 2021. Still ahead, a bit of good news to close out the show. Flu cases are down this year. We'll talk about the many contributing factors to this interesting influenza activity when we come back. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Randall White, and we're back in just a moment.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Randall White. As the year has gone on, we have seen a race to get a vaccine for COVID-19, that novel strain of coronavirus that has spread throughout the world and changed how we lived our lives. In past years, around December, we would always invite Dr. Dean Blumberg, infectious disease specialist at UC Davis Children's Hospital, to join us to talk about the flu and flu vaccine. This year, he became a regular on the show as we navigated the pandemic. We've invited him back on to talk a little bit about COVID-19, but we want to touch on the flu as well. And Dr. Blumberg, welcome back to Insight. Always a pleasure.
Thank you. Good morning.
Let's start with the good news. As I understand it, flu cases are unusually low this year. What was one of the first things that came to mind when you started seeing this trend?
Well, we fully expected this, and that's because at the end of last influenza season in the spring, that's just when our social distancing recommendations came into place, and we saw a dramatic drop in influenza cases as well as other respiratory viruses such as respiratory syncytial virus or RSV. And the same thing happened in the southern hemisphere during their flu season, which is our summer, that there were dramatically decreased rates of influenza.
Why is it that winter time is when flu spreads? Is it because we head indoors? It really has nothing to do with the temperature, right? Or like getting wet in the rain and coming in, you know, some of the old wives' tales sort of things.
Yeah, it doesn't have to do with getting wet and coming indoors. But what it does have to do with is the same things that facilitate transmission of COVID, which are being indoors, more crowding that's occurring, and you're not outside where the virus can get diluted by the almost infinite volume of air. But the temperature and humidity do play a bit of a role in that, both for coronaviruses and influenza viruses, that they do survive better with the lower temperature and lower humidity that we see in the winter.
So let's get a good picture of where we are in terms of flu season. How many flu cases did you treat in past years, and how would you compare that to where we are right now?
You know, I can't remember seeing a hospitalized patient with influenza yet this year. Maybe some of my colleagues have, but, wow. You know, around this time of year, usually we've got kids in the hospital, some very sick, some of them on heart-lung bypass machines because they're so sick in the ICU. And I'm not aware of anybody who's that sick in the hospital now. And then in California, nationwide, really, we're at historically low rates of influenza.
Also, more people got vaccinated, right?
I hope so. I don't have the final numbers for that, but there was a big push to encourage people to be immunized against influenza, just because of what you were talking about with Dr. Kasirier, about that many patients being hospitalized with COVID might decrease capacity to take care of patients who have influenza. So that'll be a help.
So is there anything we could learn from this to reduce the spread of the flu in the future? I mean, clearly we're not going to lock down because of the flu, but are there little things that we could do that we've learned clearly stop the spread of the flu virus?
Yeah, I agree with you that I don't think anybody has the stomach for social distancing indefinitely. So we're all looking forward to the day that we don't have to social distance, that we can have mass gatherings. So I don't think that's feasible. But we know that it's traditional in many, many Asian cultures to wear masks in public. You know, that might be something we might want to consider, because masking when you're out and about in public will decrease transmission of all respiratory viruses, really almost all respiratory viruses. And so we would expect that if that habit continues, that we can see decreased rates of influenza in the future.
Dr. Blumberg, I know a lot of people are really interested in this new, more easily transmissible strain of COVID-19, and it has made its way to California, about a half dozen confirmed cases so far. What do we need to know about this? The first I heard, it was 70% more transmissible. What does that mean exactly?
So this virus, this new variant, has a variety of mutations. Many of them are in the spike protein, which is the what we first encounter that attaches to our cells and causes initial infection. And these mutations allow the virus to attach more securely to our cells. And then it does multiply more. So there's higher viral loads, higher concentration of virus. And all that leads to increased infectivity, increased transmission. That's likely why it's become the dominant strain in certain areas. So, for example, in London and southern England, it accounts for about 60% of the circulating strains.
It's equally as deadly?
It's about the same. Yeah, it doesn't appear to cause milder or more severe clinical illness. It appears to cause the same severity of illness as the other strains.
In the past, when I'm, you know, walking down the sidewalk and somebody walks past me the other direction, so long as we both had masks on, I didn't really have much concern. With this new variant, should I be?
Well, I think it's still appropriate to social distance in addition to masking. So when it's feasible, it's always good to social distance. But with this new variant, you mentioned there have been a handful of cases detected in California. And what people need to realize is that we only sequence a very small number of the isolates. And so I would fully expect that this variant is here. Travel restrictions are not going to really change that now. And it will likely be the dominant circulating strain.
And I only have about 30 seconds left, unfortunately, but can you talk a bit about the vaccine trials UC Davis is working on and how they may differ from the Moderna and Pfizer vaccines?
Yeah, so UC Davis did participate in Pfizer vaccine trials, and there's a Novavax vaccine trial now, and this is a protein, spike protein-based vaccine, but it's not the mRNA vaccines that are the Moderna and Pfizer vaccines, but that's open for study enrollment.
Uh-huh, and any thoughts on when we could possibly see a Norovax hit the market?
Yeah, I think it's going to be probably several months from now because the studies are just getting started. This is one of the large phase three studies.
Yeah. Dr. Dean Blumberg, Chief of Pediatric Infectious Disease at UC Davis, thank you so much for the update. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And that is Insight for today. Learn more about all of our guests at capradio.org/insight. Thank you, as always, to producers Cynthia Lopez and Kyle McKinnon, managing editor Aram Sarkissian. And Joe Barr is Cap Radio's chief content officer. I'm Randall White. Thanks for joining us this morning. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause. And rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.